The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Rally fans, hope you're well and ready to settle down for a bit and enjoy some rally chat. I'm rally fan Lisa O'Sullivan, here to keep the beast, or the peace, even. I'm here to keep the peace. I also needed to check Luke's title. Is it definitely deputy editor?
Yeah. Shall we make him editor?
I think we should. Promote him, I think.
Yeah, let's promote him. Editor. As long as he doesn't become senior staff writer.
I have definitely not that good.
And that's very kind of you to give me a promotion.
I'll take it though.
Yeah, I'll take it. It doesn't come with a pay rise.
That's
obviously.
That's a shame.
No. So how Luke disappeared.
He is our deputy editor of dirtfish.com, Luke Barry. rejoins the team on Spin the Rally Pod. We've also got former motorsport team boss and our technical guru, George Donaldson. And last but never, ever least, it's our King of Chords and Dirtfish.com senior staff writer, David Evans.
Dear Lord, how can I ever come back from that? Are we still on the intros? We've been going for, it feels like, two minutes.
Ages and ages. That's because Lukey went off to go and get...
His new kit.
A parcel from the front door.
Look, what, Luke, what was it? Is it nice stuff from Sammy, our friend Sammy Dallas in Seattle?
I believe so, but I'll be honest, I've not had time to open it. So we're going to assume that.
Why don't you open it live on air? Yeah, go on.
Unboxing is very good for our figures.
Does it work if
I'm sure.
That's meant to be on YouTube, guys.
We're on the wrong forum here. Come on.
you can then post a picture of you and your new kit, as long as it's not pink.
That's a very good point. And I think you could also... You could do some very good visual description.
Yeah, come on. As we'll start talking, Luke, and you open it up and tell us what's going on.
We're
going
to listen to the sound effects.
George is not going to stay quiet while we listen to Luke. We'll go back to George's suspension on his Mini, which we were just... One thing that did scare me quite a lot was when you said there was business to attend to from last week. I can't remember. A, if I was in the podcast, I think I was, and B, did I offend you?
No, nobody offended me. Far from it. Goodness gracious, David. First of all, very hard to give me offence. I seem to give it all the time, but taking it, I don't take offence, really. But I can't remember what it was. I was listening to the podcast a second time because I was driving a fair distance and I hadn't listened to your post-Huanuhuato podcast, so I listened to that. And I'm just trying to remember. There was two things that came up. I thought I must mention those. And you know what?
So you heard
I
David got back packing to my up desk. Towards the end.
I heard all that nonsense.
Sorry.
I heard all that nonsense. And we thought it was Colin that was delaying things always. And it turns out it's you, David.
Five minutes
in, and we're still chewing the fat trying to remember what we're meant to be talking about. So I do apologise. It was to do with drivers and historical, and could they come back? It was to do with that, and I can't quite remember what it was I was going to mention, but I was going to vindicate a couple of comments that came out. I was going to vindicate or quantify. I'll go and listen to it again, and for a third time now, and write it down this time, because my head's full of other
good
things, because I was away.
Well, it's good to, see that our podcasts are so memorable. Hey, George.
I'm more interested in what's in Luke's box,
so to speak.
I don't care what's in Luke's box. It's not in my box. So
I can hear tape kind of being... pulled off.
I'm deliberately not doing anything because I didn't know when the right moment to pounce was.
Your moment has arrived.
For goodness sakes, Luke.
This is not what I expected to be doing today, I'll be honest, when I was asked to come back on the podcast.
But this is life. This is life right on the edge.
Can you hear that? That's a knife going through it at the minute.
Yeah. Careful with the knife.
I hope you realise you're off the clock here, Luke, as well. You know, you're expected to make up these hours that you spend doing this.
Yeah, I can't reclaim this as work, can I? To be honest.
No. This is the most manual labour you'll ever do.
talk amongst yourselves.
Have you just, have you actually destroyed the box now?
No.
How big is the box?
I open things in quite a methodical way, David. I don't like to rip them apart. I don't know why. It's probably possibly OCD. But yeah, I don't like
How did you... What about yours, Lise, when you opened your Dirtfish package?
I was very, very... mine didn't come in a box. Mine came in a jiffy bag, plastic bag.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that because it came to me first and I sent it off.
Yeah. Oops. It was awesome, actually. I'm very much enjoying my Dirtfish T-shirts and my hoodies. Splendid. In fact, somebody in my family has inquired about whether I want both of my hoodies and all of my T-shirts. Mm.
Which, of course, you do.
I do. Well, I'm kind of keeping them hanging on, saying, I'll have a think about it.
I love the Dirtfish T-shirts because they're so long. You know, they're really, really long. I love them to bits. I like a T-shirt.
Not when you've got boobs.
Down. Well, I don't have boobs.
Moving on.
I don't have boobs. But that's that's just purely
this
genetics,
is perhaps a good,
really, isn't it?
This is perhaps a good point to discuss where Colin is, given Colin is Colin is absent
nice
this week.
There.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, Cole. He's doing very, very important work in Dundee with the children on holiday, having a fabulous time visiting Relly's in Dundee. No doubt
cranky.
We'll all
see.
I
sent out photographs of my pizza oven. He'll be round here expecting me to cook
a
pizza
round
for
in a
everyone
flash.
Now.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He'll bring everyone else so you can feed them as well.
Oh, that'll be okay. We're allowed
and then
we'll
get some takeout as well. Undoubtedly, almost certainly.
That's rotten to suggest that I
Luke, have you opened that
on a pizza
sodding box yet?
Yes, dear yes, God. I have. But I didn't want
right,
to interrupt
now,
the conversation.
So is
Luke,
it empty?
Just jump in. They'll never stop talking otherwise. Luke, just jump in.
Yeah. It's not empty. No, I've got a fabulous selection of Dirtfish T-shirts, a hoodie, and I think a jacket in here as well, which are of course all available on the store. There's the plug for you. But yeah, this is very exciting. Actually, I have to be honest. So look forward to trying these out soon. It's nice, and as I say, go on.
So it was just slightly anticlimactic. I did expect a bit of detail about the colour and the, but you know,
They're all black.
Oh, are they?
Yes, but the fronts will be different. You'll have the one with the tartan on, perhaps.
Have you got the engine block one?
No, I've got the pace note one. I've got a
Ooh,
simple.
Oh, I like that one.
Oh, I like the pace note one.
A simple Rowsco one. I can't actually see the other one without. That's just a plain Dirtfish logo on it. What else have we got? We've got a Dirtfish sticker for the laptop as well, so stocked up.
Fabulous.
I can get a sticker.
No, you got to. Anyway, that's because he's been elevated to editorship status. See? Right.
That's a good point. Yeah. That is a very good point.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sammy. Thank you very much, Sammy.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Sammy. Thank you. Lovely, lovely. I'm wearing mine with pride, and where I would have liked to have been wearing it, she says, trying to put a smooth link in. I would love to have been wearing it in New Zealand at the weekend.
Yeah.
Did that work?
Yeah, it did. It worked. It was perfectly smooth.
Not really,
perfectly smooth, yeah.
No, Rally Otago.
Yeah.
Oh. I have to say, traveling to Mexico, the old travel home from Mexico was quite long. A lot of long delays. There were some delays, but it was also long layovers and la-di-la. And I kind of got back to the airport back in the UK thinking, oh, I'm quite glad I don't have to go to Otago now. And then actually on probably Wednesday, Thursday, Friday last week, I would have done anything to be just talking to Roger and talking to everybody down there, talking to Hayden. And you just kind of get that real sense of, wow, this is proper excitement building. And then looking at the videos that Paul Mullen from Black Magic Media sorted out for us, just absolutely epic. And what a beautiful part of the world. You've never been to the South Island, had you, George?
I stopped once in Christchurch on a flight that had originated in Argentina. Stopped very briefly in an Argentine airbase, military airbase, somewhere in the south of Argentina. It might have been Tierra del Fuego. And then it flew non-stop to Christchurch, which took 14 and a half hours. And it was a classic. It was a classic jumbo jet, and it was half empty. It was half empty because it had to be so bung full of fuel to get there.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that?
And
was that
the
same flight?
Alternate. There was no.
Was that
alternate.
The same
that
flight, George? That that Nikki and Juha Kankinen. So probably all of the team took after Gristy and Juha won Argentina, and then flew directly to New Zealand.
might have been
back
might
in
have been,
19.
Yeah, but 90. I would have been a few days later. So that flight flew, I think, twice a week or something it was at that time. I can't quite remember. We wouldn't have been on the first one because I'd have done all the clear up and everything in Argentina.
They were on the Monday morning, which I think we've told that brilliant story.
I thought we were heading for an epic George Donaldson aeroplane story there for
a moment. No. What was good was when we were at this airbase, there was an airport terminal there, but it was very, very small. It was like it was almost like an air club. But they did have a small upstairs and a tiny wee cafe, and there was maybe like about 50 or 60 seats. And of course, everybody had to get off the airplane. So there was a few hundred people, maybe maximum, milling around. And we were allowed to go upstairs to the cafe, and you could look out on the airfield. And as we went, because we kept hearing these jets flying around, which was quite exciting for me because I like airplanes. And we were told, I can't remember the as we were landing, we were told there was military manoeuvres and it might be quite interesting. Interesting air show, I think, was the words of the captain, who said it in Spanish and then in English very kindly for us. So I was as keen as mustard to get up there and have a look. And we did. And there was super étendard jets going down the runway with afterburners on, doing barrel rolls down the runway.
Oh, wow.
Maybe, I don't know,
on
50
purpose.
To 100 feet. Oh, yeah, well, of course, on purpose. If they hadn't been doing it on purpose, they'd have been smeared all over the runway. We'd have still been there waiting to leave. It was quite the most amazing air display I've ever seen. Absolutely ludicrous and mad. And what incredible pilots. Those Argentine pilots, they were something else. We were totally impressed by that. And then we flew to Argentina, and it took forever.
No, you flew to New Zealand from Argentina.
Flew to New Zealand from Argentina, and it took, I believe it was scheduled at 14 and a half hours, and I think it was pretty well spot on that.
Which, back in 93, was a long time on an aeroplane, without all the mod cons of today. Yeah. But anyway, the one story that we'll tell, and we've told it a million times already, but it's so good, it's worth telling again, is after Gristy and Juha Kankanen won Argentina and went out for the night in Buenos Aires on the, probably that I can't remember, whatever, if it finished on a Sunday, on the Sunday night. And Nikki had told Juha they'd got to be downstairs at a certain time to leave for the airport in Buenos Aires. And they came down and they got to check out at reception. And the Argentinian woman on reception said to Kankanen, "Anything from the minibar, sir," in a bit of a Spanish accent. And Kankanen looked at her and said, "I left you the light bulb." So yeah, there had been one or two things from the minibar back in the day when the minibar was actually worth having, which I have to say, it's been a long time since I've been in a hotel with anything worthwhile in a minibar. But I bet in Otago, I bet all of the minibars are full there. See that link, Lise?
Because they had time to get the fans there on the Friday night, which was amazing, but no time to organise a big party at the end of it. But it was just brilliant that the restrictions were lifted in New Zealand to actually allow people to get back to enjoying. And the pictures are fantastic. And it's great to see Hayden Padden out signing autographs. I almost feel we're heading back to normality.
Was that the first of the Kiwis being allowed to sort of travel even within their own country then?
Pretty much, I think. Yeah, it was the first time.
You're joking.
I guess it's to do with this. Well, I guess it's maybe the mass gathering thing, isn't it?
The first normal kind of big scale.
Yeah, because they would have had, you know, I don't know if they were allowed up to 100 or up to 500 or whatever, but I think that aspect was lifted the week before. And it just demonstrates the sort of flexibility of the organisers, that they'd organised for everything just in case. And this is what Roger was saying. He said it was quite exhausting because you would go through your normal organising process, and then the next week it would be like, no, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that because of these new restrictions. And then the week after, oh no, you can do that, but you can't do that. But if you want to do that, you've got to do that. I mean, just the hoops that they've jumped through as a bunch of organisers, they did a great job. And like you say, Lise, to see in the octagon there in the centre of Dunedin, it was fantastic, beautiful weather, and then just a great event. Unfortunately, not one of not one of the absolute classics with the likes of Kankanen or Alex Fiorio or Mickey Biazion going out to drive the car or Vatanen or whatever. But still, you know, Luke, you followed it really closely, didn't you? What did you make of? I mean, it was Fanger Dan was the drifting guy in the famous Mark II Escort, and then Hamish Bond was jumping out of a boat into a Subaru Impreza.
Yeah, it's quite nuts, isn't it, when you think about the fact that these are two massive sports people in New Zealand. And obviously, we're all on this podcast speaking from the UK. I can't think of an equivalent to mind quick enough to contemplate it. But can you imagine a rally in our part of the world getting the people of their stature into a rally car for the first time? It's just nuts what the Oakley brothers are able to do with that event. But I was quite sad in a way for Hamish Bond, because we never really got to see what he could do, because I don't know what the problem was on the first day. I think it might have been a gearbox issue of some kind, but
yeah, it was.
Yeah, because he was doing okay, and then I think he got about three stages in and the thing just packed up. So already then, obviously you can return on the second day, and I think then he had some more issues on the second stage of Sunday as well. So it's one of these things, he's probably going to have a bit of an itch to scratch now to come back and do it, which actually in a way is a good thing for us as rally fans. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was kind of a shame to see, because I would have expected his times to get a lot quicker, just as he got used to how to drive at speed and the fact that he could control it. Because I didn't hear of anybody saying that he was over the limit or at any points or doing anything daft. He certainly didn't crash the car, so that's always the first sign. Fanger Dan, yeah. I think, was the eighth in the classic rally, somewhere around there.
That's right.
Which in itself, again, if you consider that they're not necessarily big names to everybody in Europe, but the guys over there in that field, it's always arguably more competitive than the modern main field at the front. So to be in the mix in the top 10 and amongst that sort of field is quite remarkable. And another one, not make any real mistakes as well. So I was quite impressed.
I love the idea as well of someone like Fanger Dan, a drifting legend, not only being pretty to look at, as it were, with the drifting side of things, but quick with it as well, because yeah, I mean, you can make a lovely drift around a corner look epic and graceful, and it takes forever, whereas in a rally car you kind of need to make it quick and pretty quick.
Absolutely. I'm interested in George, what's your take on drifting?
Look, it got to be just the most fun ever. I mean, it's rallying it's rallying without the scares, isn't it? Because you know where you're going the whole time, and you can plan it out. I think I listened to a couple of his comments during the event, and he was happy his skills would translate, and I had no doubt his skills would translate. The hard thing would be to know where the road was going, and that dealing with that level of uncertainty, understanding how to handle the car through a corner where you're not quite sure where it's going to go. And I think that I saw having a bit of a moment when a corner tightened a little bit and he slipped off wide at one point in car. It might have been him, it might not have been. It might have been the Toyota Celica that I think won the classic class in the end. But no, his skills should translate perfectly well. And he's into a classic RS1800 Escort that's going to be a lovely car to drive and just perfect for hanging the tail out of. So it's, I mean, a soft start from him from that point of view. I mean, it could not have been better in learning the pace notes and getting the road craft so that you can actually carry those drifts and carry the speed and not scrub the speed. And listen to his comments. Yeah, I think he would maybe come back for more. But you know, he's a professional sportsman. It's, you know, you've got to stay focused. He might want to do rallying for fun once or twice a year, and that would be about it. He can't go away spending all his hard-earned money on very expensive rally cars when he's got a career to craft on the drifting scene, which is, you know, massive. And I mean, the drifting stuff is super high speed as well. I mean, it's they're up at what, you know, 180, 200 kph at times on these circuits.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, it's massively. Yeah.
It's almost the
massively quick.
The beauty of it belies the speed.
Yeah, a lot of it's tight circuit. Yeah, yeah.
Now the
thinking,
Lise, apparently is that you in Pukekohe, where they do a lot of the drifting down there, you turn the car in at 200 kph. That's 120 mile an hour, and you're so close you can open the window and touch the car next to you as you drift side by side. But I spoke to Calle Rovanpera this morning. We were chatting just about what he'd done on his holidays and blah, blah, blah. And I was telling him about Fanger Dan. And I said, because obviously Calle does a lot of drifting himself. And I said, you know, do you genuinely, does it help? And he said, yeah, it does, because, you know, with drifting, you are constantly on the edge of the grip. You're always running right up to the edge of the grip level. And to understand where that is and how the car will work, okay, it's totally a different car, but you're still, you're working with that, that sort of grip, the maximum grip, aren't you?
You're dealing with the pure physics of it and not the geography, if you like, because the circuit, you obviously know exactly where you're going and you can be letter perfect every time, but it does require that you are just, you know, millimeter perfect every time. And, you know, and Lisa, as you're saying, you know, the guys could literally just touch the car next to them, but, you know, if you missed it by a meter, because the drift's so long and you're scrubbing effectively, when you're drifting you are scrubbing speed, so you carry this massive speed in, and the idea is you carry as much of it out, and on the ideal corner, of course, the apex will be in the center of the corner, then it'll open out as you start to drift and you can build the speed back up as you straighten up the car. And that'll be the most rewarding aspect to drive. But so your
have you ever done it, George?
Just for fun, I did a little bit at Knock Hill with a Subaru rally car, just by default. I had nothing else to do, doing demo events for a load of drifting guys there, and I had a couple of friends there, and they were standing next to the drifting guys, and they said, "How come that guy in an absolutely standard rally car Subaru is drifting more than we are? How's he managing it?" But what they didn't realise was that I had the diff wide open and I just made it rear wheel drive. But I was, again, turning into the hairpin at Knock Hill. I was nosing in and putting the car sideways at well over 100 miles an hour, which was great fun. And I had a little Honda. We were doing sort of demo laps with these rally cars, and I had the quickest car, but not by much, because a Honda Civic, a very fast Honda Civic, just literally 50 meters behind me. And I told them what I was going to do. I said, "So look, don't get tangled up with me, for goodness sakes. Feel free to pass, but don't get tangled up with me. We don't need that sort of mess."
So what do you do, George? Did you turn it in on the handbrake, or?
I don't think I used the handbrake. I think I just flicked it in. I was on rally tires, so I didn't have very much traction, so it was relatively easy. And really, I wasn't drifting in the true sense of the word. I was keeping it sideways until I was going down the straight. So I was drifting in maybe 60, 70, 80 metres before the corner. I would be almost perpendicular to the road, as sideways as I could get it. I needed full power in third gear to stop it spinning out, because you need to keep the front wheels turning on opposite lock to keep the front coming round as well, otherwise you'll just spin out. And then as the car slows, you can point the wheels in, and then you've got to very quickly snatch second, because the car ran out of power. So you power changed down to second gear, literally. It was a standard gearbox. And
again,
the car's,
if you didn't do
heavy,
that, you'd spin, wouldn't you? Because
you would just lose momentum. Power, and it would spin out, yeah. So, but
well, I tell
I
you what,
to successfully do that. So it's fun.
There is a great opportunity, isn't there, Luke? In I can't remember the date. Let us come up with the date now. The Macrae Rally Challenge at Knock Hill on June.
It's the first weekend of July.
July.
Yeah. Well, we've got our very own British Olympian taking part in that.
We
don't
have Chris Hoy. Yeah, Chris Hoy's doing it. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, George, maybe. I'll tell you what. Luke, you'll obviously be there for Dirtfish. I'll be there for Dirtfish. George, you come down for Dirtfish.
I'll be arriving back from Kenya that morning. So, I should be able to. I should be into Edinburgh about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. So, I can easily just stop in there on the way home. That'll be perfect.
Ah, good man. And we can make another podcast about watching and marking people out of 10 going around George's hairpin. At Knock Hill.
Absolutely perfect. I'd love that.
I'd be surprised if the guys at Knock Hill if they do hear this, aren't wanting George to do the drifting himself after this prowess he sold himself as. That'll be an amazing crowd pleaser.
What you've got to remember is, as a youngster, when I was only 18, 19 years old and had discovered rallying and had some sort of car, and any sort of car, our car club used to do like a monthly club night at Knock Hill, where it's just open to us in the summer. You know, we'd have two or three a year. You just go along and just drive your car around. The track was just open for us, and there'd be a couple of dozen of us there just playing around, and it was lovely. And my best trick ever was racing a friend called Callum Guy, and he was in his Avenger, which was a lot more powerful than the little, I think I was driving my little Fiesta at the time. And I was determined not to, he was catching me up down the straight, and I was determined not to let him pass. And he was going up the inside just as I entered the corner, and I did a bit of a Verstappen on him and cut in. And I clipped the curb, and I put the car up on two wheels and turned in far too fast. But I knew I'd get away with it because there's enough room to go off down there, and you just lose a little bit of time and you get away with it. Well, I put it up on two wheels, and then I realised that actually I can balance it here. And the car, as it went down, I just kept turning in and to stay online, and I just stayed up on two wheels and actually steered it down on two wheels until I was about halfway down the hill to the next left-hander, which I can't remember the name of it. I think they've changed them all now. And I dropped it back down at the two wheels, and Callum was so shocked by what he's seen. I got it was another lap until he got past me. It was great. We did have a bit
Callum,
of a laugh
Callum
about
Guy,
that.
Actually, I'm not decrying your own abilities, George, yeah. But Callum Guy, he was a genuinely top driver, wasn't he? Wasn't he a junior team member or something?
He might well have been that, to be honest. As Callum was coming up through in the car club, I was working as the newsletter editor for the magazine. I also ran single venue events at Knock Hill. I was managing to get 25 miles out of Knock Hill in a day.
More
stuff I have to add to your CV, George.
Oh, yeah, yeah, clerk of the course, about half a dozen
times.
Here's
one for you, George. Here's one for you. So, Callum Guy, I remember this. This is a bit of a noddy memory of mine, was co-driven by two of the co-drivers that co-drove for Colin McRae. Name them.
I reckon Robert Reed would be one.
Yep. Well, he got the difficult one.
And the other one, was it Nicky Jack, the other one?
No, it was Nicky Grist. But Grist. It was there Reedy. Reedy was the one I didn't expect you to get.
Look at that.
Very impressive.
There's not much that Robert Reed's done that I won't know.
Not done.
We were very good friends. Stunning.
You were still are very good friends.
I'm not sure. What is he now? He's doing quite well now. Is he not? Yes, vice president of FIA. My goodness me.
Yeah. No, very we'll keep team. His feet on the floor.
Are we going to talk about a Targa rally? Because
I was
getting excited about
Vice
that.
President of the FIA.
Yes, indeed, afternoon. If you want to lift your feet off the floor, that's fine by us, Robert.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're back to
Targa. I have to say, the content, well, I know none of us could be there, but the content on the website, I have to raise my chapeau, do a big old chapeau to the content on the dirtfish.com website, because the videos are brilliant.
Yeah.
Really, really, really good stuff.
I've got to say, Luke, as our new editor of dirtfish.com, you did a sublime job.
Can I just interrupt? Can I get this in writing, by the way? That's the third mention already.
No, so, okay. Not a chance. But it was a pretty hectic weekend, but brilliant weekend for the website, wasn't it, Luke?
Yeah, I have to say, it's easy for me to sit here and sort of blow smoke up what we've all managed to achieve. But I genuinely think even the videos that we managed to produce, we had Colin Clark doing some of it from at home, actually, before he jetted off to Scotland on his holidays.
With the donkeys.
Yes, with the donkeys, yeah. We also had people on the ground giving us not just information, but they're presenting the videos for us as well. And I thought that balance was actually really nice. It gave it a bit of a local feel, yeah, which is difficult to do when we're on the other side of the world. So for me, in writing a report, that meant like 5 a.m. alarm calls and stuff. But even in that, all the information we had to do stuff was impeccable. It felt like I was there, even though I was sat in a room with a laptop, nowhere near any rally cars. It was basically a massive shout out to everybody that's helped us with the event. And I've never been to New Zealand. It's massively on the bucket list.
No, me neither.
But the very small interactions I've had already, it just tells you everything about what's great about the country is they're all resourceful and they're all so friendly. They'll do anything to help you. And without them, we couldn't have done what we did. So I don't want to take any credit for our team. I think it was all down to them.
Yeah, but the one Kiwi that let us down, no bloody Hayden Padden, didn't send us our little selfie video saying, watch all of the action on dirtfish.com. We're not going to forget that, Hayden. Trust me, we're not going to forget that.
But look, his technical expose of the AP4 against the R5 was excellent.
That
and
was
if
mega.
If not watched that, get a look at it. Hayden did a lovely job and you get a great little explanation. I still had a couple of questions for him, but we'll get round to that. I know what one of the things I was going to talk to you about last week, seeing as it was Luddite. A Luddite was the group of people, Luddites were named as the group of people that destroyed all the machinery, the very first machines that came in, the automation that came in which I think were weaving machines.
Weaving, that's right.
Was it, was it Robert Luddite or something? Was the leader of the group, the union?
Captain Ludd.
It wasn't. No, it wasn't Captain Ludd. I don't think a Luddite.
I think
is,
it was. I think it was a mythical. Was,
yeah. We missed you. That's right.
This is where the word sabotage comes from as well, because machines used to be destroyed by people chucking their sabots into machinery to break them, which were wooden clogs.
There you go, look at that.
Sabotage.
But that was in France, though, was it?
It was, but it was around about the same time.
Yes, yeah, okay.
But it did. Revolution.
It did also collectively refer to people who were technologically dunces.
Scared and inept,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why this Colin is, and I fitted into that bracket, yeah, quite nicely.
And we decided it was a slight, it was a Luddite was a fraction above a troglodyte. Yeah.
First time we've had troglodyte on the pod. Yeah. Excellent.
It's been a unique Wednesday, hasn't it? We've had some history of literature, we've had drifting, we've had merchandise, a tiny bit of rallying so far.
Yeah.
I was going to say, have we actually...
And you editor wielding a knife as well.
Ned
yeah.
Ludd.
Yeah, that was it. It's all happening.
Yeah, we can actually return to the rallying. I think we should do though. You slayed Hayden Padden for not providing the video for us, but
I defended him, Lisa.
He did. Yeah, you did.
And he was a bit busy.
He has notched up a ninth win as well. How important for you? You know, when somebody keeps winning, there's always an element of people going, "Oh, did they win again?" But with Hayden Padden, we kind of all is forgiven.
Of course it is, because he's stuck there in New Zealand and the guy is hankering after getting back in the WRC. On a personal basis, I would love to see him back. I'd love to see him love to see him right all the wrongs that I'm sure he feels has been done to him, whether it's by COVID or by circumstance of older drivers coming back. And, you know, he may well decry the fact that Sebastian Loeb took his drive away three or four years ago, but actually... I think that decision was vindicated by Malcolm Wilson this year, who brought Loeb back yet again and produced that incredible Monte Carlo win. So, vindicated, I think.
But it was, I mean, Luke, it was never, you know, we have a lot of events in motorsport that are a little bit of a slam dunk, but this one really was, wasn't it? You know, not only is Hayden, you know, head and shoulders above the rest of the guys who are very, very, very good drivers, but Hayden is world class. There's no doubt about that. But also his car is a proper car that, you know, his team puts so much development effort and everything into it. Obviously backed by Hyundai New Zealand as well. It's the real deal, isn't it, that package?
Yeah, they've done a lot of work, and it's probably a lot more work than people think, because as Lisa kind of alluded to before, it's, you see a driver winning constantly, you kind of just assume that, okay, well, is he really trying? Is he giving it his all? But he's giving 100% to that. More percentage. I know people can be funny about whether you can have more than 100%. If I can forgive that, I would say 110% effort into the program. And it's quite remarkable in a way, because he knows all the rallies. He's won them all before. You could argue, where's the motivation to keep going? But when he does come back to the World Championship in WRC2 this year, and if he gets further ahead and back into the top class, where we all feel, I think, that he does belong, this will make a massive difference. And you could say, well, why is that? Because they're not the same rallies. It's different kind of competition, but he's competing against himself, essentially, and he's more than happy to do that. His goal was just to try and beat his times from a year before, and I think he managed about seven stage records over the weekend. A lot on the second day. I know we had a puncture and a drive shaft problem on the first day, but it's quite incredible that he just keeps at it. He keeps fighting. He's never ever going to be accused for not trying, is he? I think that's the best way to put it.
No.
It's remarkable.
And again, it was good to see. You know, there were some new cars there. There was a new Skoda out there, wasn't there? And then obviously we had Emma Gilmore's car.
And she got a result, David. She didn't retire.
She did get a result. She was running third, and then
she had a wee problem.
The brake problem. But who, there was the guy, who's the guy, is it Ben in the new Skoda?
Ben Hunt.
Ben Hunt, yeah, who looked really quick.
Yeah, I've been particularly impressive given it was, I think, and I might be wrong with this, but I think it was his first time in any kind of R5 or Rally 2 or AP4 derivative of car. I think he had a Subaru the year before, and he's kind of stuck with that for a while.
Yeah, Subaru, yeah, Subaru WRX-STI.
Perfect, okay. Wow. So I'm not talking nonsense, that's good, for once.
And the same with Ari Pettigrew as well. He was in that Holden Barina thing for the first time, the four-wheel drive car.
Yeah.
I've just got to tell you a very quick story. While I was my first ever time in Australia, so I landed into Perth, going to pick up the hire car, and all I can think about is the fact that I'm bound to end up with some massive V8, essentially some huge supercar, some
Holden Commodore or whatever. Hot.
Yeah, it's obviously too hot. Everywhere's too hot. So I went to the hire car desk, and the woman was like, "Ah, yeah, David, we've got you a Holden Barina." And I was like, "Wow, that sounds so cool." And I walked outside Suzuki and I was Swift. Clicking it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how's no. that? That's rubbish. Oh, yeah. There's definitely not a V8 engine in that.
We should so anyway, say just for if anything legal purposes, Ari Pettigrew's Holden is not rubbish. It was very competitive. AP4 kind is a lot different.
Yeah, I wouldn't be disappointed with that if I got Ari Pettigrew's Holden Barina. Oops. Good point. Thanks, Luke.
Yeah.
So it was a great event and another just demonstration run by Hayden Padden. It's funny though, you know, you look back across other championships and events that are consistently won by the same person, and they do get a little bit dull. But with this, there's such sort of fervent, enthusiastic support for Hayden and everything that he's doing in New Zealand. You just get a feeling that actually the whole country is behind him. They know they're going to get beaten by him.
You really do. Yeah.
But they're all sort of working towards this bigger goal of getting him back into WRC, which of course he will be later this year.
Yeah. And wasn't the footage we got spectacular? I mean, you know, I was watching not just Hayden, the other, you know, top 10 drivers. And some of the classics, they were really Jeff Judd. I mean, very courteously went Super. Off into a bank, went off into a bank right in front of the camera at one point, and spectacularly drove away. He retired. He thought he'd knackered his engine. It was only a screw loose in the distributor, apparently. So at least he's not damaged his engine. At least I hope he's not. But he did retire just near the end. But it was very spectacular to watch. And I was just struck once again by my earlier comments this year, or even last year, when I'm saying, you don't need a World Rally car for it to look fast. What I saw in New Zealand from the footage we got back from Otago, those cars were on the limits. Cars coming across crests, appearing in the air, still going up as the road goes up. They're already airborne, and they're landing well over the crest on the downhill. You cannot imagine how scary that is to drive, even when you have pace notes, even when you know the road. It's always, you just, you know, a tiny little bit of air movement or a little bump just moves the car a little bit wrong as you're entering that crest. You've got a long time to think about where you're going to land. You might just be going off a few centimetres every metre or so, but that's enough to take you very close to the edge of the road, which is maybe, you know, I mean, I'm not quite sure how much airtime they've got, but it looked to me like 70, 80 metres, never more than half a metre above the road, but a long way and a big radius over the crest and high speed. Very spectacular.
And a lovely, lovely car. Dean Buist. That, but I didn't realise it was a replica.
What, the Toyota?
The Group B, the Celica.
I thought it was a replica, yeah. I wasn't sure.
What made you think that, George? What did I miss out on?
There wasn't that many of them around.
They dismantled a load of them, didn't they?
They weren't really kept at that time. There's a couple. There's just really only very few. There's maybe three or four tops.
That was the Whistling Pig, wasn't it?
That was the Whistling Pig. So the car, why that nickname? Just because it was relatively quiet, turbocharged. And when that car came out, it was one of the few cars. So it was rear wheel drive. Came out in the mid 80s, like 80, was it 83 or 84?
83,
it came out. So it was turbocharged. It had electronics. It was pure electronics in it. When a lot of cars still, okay, they had electronic ignition, but it wasn't pure electronics in it. So it was computer-driven car and turbocharged. It was just called the Whistling Pig. And it was attractive of a car. I mean, it was absolutely, there was nothing fine about it at all. But it was just very, very effective. It was basically the same as a Group 4 Escort, a little bit longer, probably a little bit heavier. And about 150 to 200 horsepower more. It was
and destroyed its rear tires, didn't it? I mean, it just went through rear tires.
When you
also the car that cost Pondy second on the 1985 RAC it, Bloody
it was,
Rally.
It Sorry, was when Juha Kankinen stopped and lifted Marco Alain out of a ditch. Uwe Andersson gave Juha an awful rollicking for that. Actually,
relatively. I love the name, though. I do get the feeling that that's somewhere where we should go and order, go and get a round of drinks at the Whistling Pig.
Yeah, that's definitely a pub's name, isn't it? But that car did do the Scottish. There was a factory team came to the Scottish Rally in 1986. I think
really?
It was. So 1986 Who drove? Or 1987. It was Bjorn Waldegard and Lars Erik Torp.
Oh, wow.
Lars Erik Torp retired with a damaged cylinder head, which was quite unusual. He must have buzzed the engine. Bjorn, I think, finished third behind the four-wheel drives. But I think the Scottish... I mean, that was a blind rally. No pace notes at that time.
Yeah.
The Scottish fans got a fantastic lesson in rear-wheel drive. And he put a lot of the four-wheel drive cars to shame.
You sent me diving into EWRC again, George.
Yeah, 1986.
Headlong.
I'm sure Bjorn finished third.
Yeah, you're dead right.
Yeah, I remember that. I had a whole load of my German friends. Obviously, I was working on the rally as a team member at that point, and the start was in Glasgow. And the night before the start, so the day before the start, Simple Minds were playing two or three concerts at Ibrox Stadium, and there's a few of them were quite keen to go and see it. So I said, right, well, let's go along. I got a car and we went along and tried to buy tickets, literally, go in like you would. And and there was no way to go in. There was trying different box offices, and they said, no, it's closed, it's full, you can't get in. And one of the security guys said, come with me. He said, I think there's a place around the back, I can sort you out. And we walked away around the back of Ibrox Stadium. And he opened the fire door and in we went. We had to give him 50 quid, as I recall, but we got in just fine. So that was it. So Simple Minds live.
And
good stuff.
An event won by Mickey Finn in a Peugeot 205.
That's right, yeah. And I think was
with
it
with Mark Lovell second.
I was going to say Mark Lovell second in the RS200. Yeah.
Which year was it that on the Scottish Lovell had that big accident? It must have been 86. He rolled, didn't he? And it took
that.
The screen out. Yeah, but he obviously carried on.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't,
right, I'm now
I
going
think,
into YouTube.
It does
to
ring
find
a bell.
That.
Oh, now you're going to have to go and find that now. There we go.
I'm going to interrupt you very rudely again, George, just because I've got one eye on the time and there is one more thing
I've
like
got a meeting
to talk
to go
about
to.
Before.
Oops.
You have,
sorry.
But very, very quickly. Weather. It's good because you get to talk about the weather at the same time.
Mm.
It seems to be interfering with people's preparations for the Rally Croatia, which I was thinking end of April, should be lovely. You know, nice spring, gorgeous weather, but it's been snowing over in Zagreb, and I know that definitely upset Thierry Neuville's tests.
It did. Oh, he had to move his test day. I think he was on the Saturday, moved to the Monday or something like that. I can't remember. But yeah, there was quite a lot of snow arrived through the test weekend. He was about the only one that was impacted. In fact, he was the only one that was impacted. And actually his test wasn't because they moved it to another day and he ran, I think, in some wet, dry conditions. But yeah, it just shows that still there is great potential for the weather to do its thing. Talking to a few people now, starting to gather information towards next week, I think it would be quite a surprise if we did have snow.
I'm looking at the weather forecast here. It's gorgeous there this week. 21, 22, 23 degrees. Yeah.
Drops down a bit cooler though, doesn't it? Beginning of
next
week,
it's still in the high teens next week. So
Luke, can you hear the excitement in David's voice that he can actually take an extra jumper with
him?
I can.
That's like music to his ears, isn't it? Completely.
Totally.
He's going to get his Dirtfish hoodie out.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they'll have them all on. It's just really, really exciting to get back to WRC action again. It's been a long old 8 weeks.
It has.
We do have a chance to preview it properly, don't we?
Yes.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
Although
I actually, forecast.
I will be in Cornwall. We'll probably do this on Monday next week. And I'll be on holiday in Cornwall, just at the end of a long weekend in Cornwall. So I may or may not, depending on how much tribute or Doombar I've consumed. I may or may not join you, depending on how bad my head is.
We might make you get up early in the morning, just in case, just anyway.
Excellent. I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, you've dug yourself a hole there, David, I'm afraid.
I have a little bit.
There is one bit of slightly unfinished business, which is the way to get Luke, Lisa and myself to New Zealand for the rally this year, David.
Oh, yeah, that'd be now, great.
David, you know, you've got a very serious job with a lot of pressure, and that pressure has just quadrupled. Because your duty is to get us there. I mean, quite frankly, I don't care what I do when I'm there. But I mean, I don't require business travel. I would rather not go
short
via
legs.
some shaky airline. I'd like to travel on one of the some slightly more major carriers that's not got a bad accident record. Thank you.
Other than that,
I suppose as long as we've got an internet connection and I can work, I think it'll be okay. I've done a couple of longer boat journeys and actually they're phenomenally like being locked into a hotel room for 11 days, as happened to me last year when I came back from Kenya. Not recommended.
Bit of quarantine.
Not recommended. Yeah, bit of quarantine. Wouldn't recommend it. And the boat's like that. Okay. So, yeah.
Okay,
so,
I am now 7 minutes late for my meeting, and it was quite an important meeting.
Right,
go and be important somewhere else.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of Spin the Rally Pod. Don't forget to keep checking the website for updates. That is dirtfish.com. And if you want to drop us a line, @dirtfishrally is the way to do it. Thank you, guys. It's been a treat.
Bye. Thank you, Lisa. Have a good one.
Go on, David. Run away. Quick.